And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
Senior representatives of the International Lutheran Council, the ILC, and the Lutheran World Federation, the LWF, met in Wittenberg, Germany on the 24th to the 25th of February 2016. Pastor John Ehlers represented the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England. Both the LWF and ILC are honouring the commitment they made for the executive committees of each organisation to meet with one another as agreed in the Memorandum of Understanding from the 3rd of March 2005. Both organisations discussed their plans for the forthcoming 500th Reformation celebration in 2017, sharing study documents and details of planned preparations over the next 12 months. The LWF presented the study report, Self-Understanding of Communion, and this is a significant document for the LWF. It also presented the process around hermeneutics, and it announced its conclusion with a document to be presented to the LWF Council in June 2016. Reference was made to the humanitarian engagement of the LWF, which is currently serving 1.7 million refugees in the world and 600,000 internally displaced people. The ILC admitted three new members, the Lutheran Church of Norway, Siberian Evangelical Lutheran Church, and the Lutheran Church Synod of Nicaragua. The ILC has a World Seminaries Conference scheduled for October 2016 in Wittenberg. The ILC is currently in discussion with three Nordic dioceses, the Evangelical Lutheran Diocese of Finland, the Evangelical Lutheran Diocese in Norway, and the Mission Province in Sweden for possible membership in the ILC. The parties discussed a letter dated 26th of November 2015 from Dr. Martin Jung to Bishop Hans-Jörg Voigt, following up on the question of how the ILC and LWF will interact with each other locally and internationally, and seeking clarification about specific experiences and situations that have raised questions in the LWF. The LWF representatives asked questions about parts of the document, and the ILC agreed that those sections could be expressed more clearly. The ILC presented a statement of the International Lutheran Council on the document From Conflict to Communion, the Lutheran Catholic Commemoration of the Reformation 2017. This document was prepared for the ILC's informal dialogue with the PCPCU and was presented at the ILC World Conference in September 2015. The Joint Declaration on the Doctrine of Justification, the JDDJ, is a document created and agreed to by the Catholic Church's Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity, PCPCU, and the Lutheran World Federation in 1999. The question was asked, what is the next step? Does the ILC desire to make an agreement with the LWF PCPCU, similar to how the Methodists joined the JDDJ, by presenting their own statement, which offered their distinctive perspectives? The ILC was pleased by the offer of the LWF to consider this possibility. Next steps were agreed upon on how to approach this. The LWF, recognising the fellowship understanding of the ILC member churches, asked if it would be possible for the ILC to participate or attend the joint ecumenical commemoration of the Reformation to be held in Lund. The event will be held on the 31st of October 2016. The ILC accepted the invitation. Four Catholic nuns from the late Mother Teresa's Missionaries of Charity were among 16 victims killed by six unidentified gunmen at a home for the elderly in Yemen's southern port city of Aden. The four missionary nurses were serving breakfast to the home's 80 residents on the 4th of March when armed assailants stormed the facility located in Aden's Sheikh Othman district. The intruders reportedly gained entrance to the care home by telling the security guard one of them had come to visit his mother. While two militants stood guard outside, the other four pushed inside, killing four guards and other employees, including several nurses, cleaning staff and a Yemeni cook. At least five of the victims were Ethiopians. All the casualties had been handcuffed and then shot in the head. The slain nuns were identified by Asian News as Sister Anselm from India, Sister Marguerite and Sister Reginite, both from Rwanda, and Sister Judith from Kenya. None of the residents of the nursing home were harmed. Pope Francis described the Aden massacre as an act of senseless and diabolical violence. labelling the four nuns the martyrs of today, he called them victims not just of their attackers, but also of indifference, of this globalisation of indifference that does not care. Although during the attack, a fifth nun, Sister Sally, managed to hide undetected in the storm refrigerator, an Indian priest living at the facility remains missing and believed kidnapped by the gunman. Originally from the Indian state of Kerala, Salesian Father Thomas Uzaminil, 57, had lived in Yemen for the past 5 years. After Aden's Holy Family Church, where he was served, was attacked and torched last September, he had moved to the care home. On the 6th of March, Indian Foreign Minister Sushma Swaraj promised her government would spare no efforts to rescue the missing Salesian priest. Yemen is a conflict zone. We do not have an embassy there, but we will spare no efforts to rescue Father Tom Amazil, she said via Twitter. The foreign minister also confirmed that Sister Sari had been moved to a safe location and was being evacuated from Yemen. Initial media reports after the attack had blamed Ansar al-Sharia for the killings, but the Islamist group linked with al-Qaeda promptly denied responsibility. This is not our operation, and it is not our way of fight, they told Arabic media sources. On the 6th of March, Yemeni security officials blamed the attack on militants of the self-proclaimed Islamic State and accused them of taking away Father Uzaminil during the raid. Militants of both al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula and Islamic State have exploited the chaos and lawlessness prevailing nationwide since Yemen's civil war erupted in 2014. According to the United Nations, more than 6,000 people have been killed and 2.4 million people displaced in the fighting between the Iran-backed Houthi rebels in the north and the Saudi-backed government in the south. We knew that the situation was difficult and that the sisters were running a certain risk, Bishop Paul Hinder, apostolic vicar of the Arabian Peninsula, said after the attack. The missionaries of charity died as martyrs, he told Catholic News Agency. For me, there is no doubt that the sisters have been victims of hatred, hatred against our faith. He said he believes they were targeted because certain radical groups in Yemen simply do not support the presence of Christians who serve the poorest of the poor. Four of Mother Teresa's convents were set up in Yemen after the invitation of the then northern government in 1973. The Catholic sisters still serving these convents in Hodeida, Taiz, Sana and Aden care for mentally and physically challenged children and elderly people. A British man was removed from a plane by armed police at Luton Airport after a fellow passenger read a message on his mobile phone about prayer and reported him as a security threat. Laulu Opibi, 40, from London, said he was forced to hand over his phone and supply his password in order to establish his innocence after he tried to arrange a conference call prayer with friends using WhatsApp. A detective subsequently questioned and cleared Opibi, but the pilot refused to allow him back on the EasyJet flight to Amsterdam last Thursday, and he was forced to wait more than 3 hours for the next scheduled departure. The Nigerian-born Christian believes the passenger next to him assumed he was a Muslim and jumped to the conclusion that he may be a terrorist. That guy doesn't know me and within 2 minutes is judging me, he told The Guardian. Even if I was a Muslim, it was pretty unfair the way I was treated. I don't think anyone, irrespective of their religion, should be treated in such a way. If we keep giving in to this kind of bigotry and irrational fear, I dare say that the terrorists will have achieved their aim. Opibi, a business analyst, said that as they waited the plane's 6:45 a.m. departure, his fellow passenger asked him, "What do you mean by prayer?" Taken aback that he'd been reading over his shoulder, Opibi explained that he was arranging to pray with friends. About 2 minutes later, the male passenger went to the front of the plane and began a conversation with the cabin crew, Opibi said. The man was taken to the door of the cockpit and returned 15 minutes later, telling Opibi that he was getting off the plane because he felt unwell. A few minutes later, two armed officers entered the plane. They asked Opibi for his phone and told him to remove his belongings and accompany them off the plane and into the terminal building. After an officer confirmed that he was being questioned because of what happened with the other passenger, Opibi explained that he was a Christian, showing them a copy of the Bible in his bag. They asked me which church I attend and how long I've been going there, he said. They also asked if I've ever thought about changing my religion, to which I replied, no. They also asked him about the name of the conference call prayer group, which was ISI Men, an acronym for Iron Sharpens Iron, from the Bible quote, "As iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another." The Guardian understands that the passenger who reported up a BI may have misread this as ISIS. An officer eventually told up a BI that he was in the clear, but that the pilot had said he should take another flight. He suffered further humiliation when an officer accompanied him to the EasyJet desk to help him get onto the next flight, and seven other passengers from the 6:45 a.m. flight who had left the plane because of security fears also joined the queue. OPBI said one of them had spotted him and said, "If he's on the next flight, I'm not getting on it." He said the officer took the female passenger aside and explained the situation. Before OPBI boarded the 1025 flight, the officer shook his hand and expressed sympathy for his ordeal, he said. But now he fears he's on a terrorist watch list, because when he returned the next day from his business trip, the electronic passport gate did not let him through, and he had to speak to an immigration officer before proceeding. "Someone felt I was a terrorist because they saw the word prayer on my phone, and now I stand in uncertainty about my freedom of movement in and out of the UK," he said. A Bedfordshire police spokeswoman confirmed that his officers removed an individual from the flight, but were satisfied that there was no concern around the passenger travelling. An EasyJet spokesman said, "The safety and security of its passengers and crew is our highest priority, which means that if a security concern is raised, we will always investigate it as a precautionary message. We would like to apologise for any inconvenience caused to the passenger." A top Vatican official vowed to work to put an end to the rash of suicides in his Australian hometown after the church sex abuse scandal, after meeting with victims and acknowledging that he had failed to act on an allegation decades ago. Cardinal George Pell, Pope Francis's top financial advisor, met with some of the Australian victims of abuse who travelled to Rome to witness his 4 days of remote video-linked testimony to Australia's Royal Commission. The commission is investigating how the Catholic Church and other institutions responded to sexual abuse of children over decades. Emerging from the meeting with survivors at a Rome hotel, Pell read aloud a statement pledging to help his hometown of Ballarat recover from scores of suicides of abuse victims. He said he hoped the city of 100,000 might one day become an example for practical help for all those wounded by the scourge of sexual abuse. "One suicide is too many, and there have been many such tragic suicides," Pell told reporters. "I commit myself to work with the group to try to stop this so that suicide is not seen as an option for those who are suffering." Ballarat, a heavily Catholic city in Victoria State, has had a devastating experience with the abuse scandal. Testimony to the Royal Commission revealed how the Christian Brothers religious order in particular preyed on dozens of children in the schools that it ran from the 1960s to the 1980s. Pell was called to answer questions about his time as a priest in Ballarat and as an auxiliary bishop in Melbourne. The 4 days of testimony saw the 74-year-old cardinal answer questions from the commission and a succession of lawyers for victims from around 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. each night. During the final round, Pell acknowledged that he didn't immediately act when a schoolboy brought an abuse allegation to him in 1974 against a cleric and should have done more. Pell told the inquiry he was a junior priest when the unnamed student at St. Patrick's College told him that Christian Brothers teacher Edward Dowlan is misbehaving with boys. "I suppose it was technically a complaint, a lament," Pell said. Asked by Commission Chairman Peter McLennan what he did about it, Pell replied, "I didn't do anything about it." Pell said he eventually raised concerns about Dowland with the school chaplain. The chaplain replied that the Christian Brothers order was dealing with the allegations. Dowland was later removed from the school. But Dowland continued to abuse children as a teacher at other schools until 1985. "With the experience of 40 years later, certainly I would agree that I should have done more," Pell said. At the same time, Pell denied allegations that he angrily dismissed an allegation against the same cleric made by another schoolboy or attempted to bribe an abuse victim to stay quiet. And finally, a bizarre standoff with a naked woman dancing on top of a big lorry brought traffic in Houston, Texas to a halt on Monday morning. The westbound lanes of a highway were shut down for more than 2 hours while the woman entertained drivers stuck in the standstill. Views from Air 11 showed the woman twerking and gyrating for passing vehicles just after 9 a.m. Firefighters and police officers used ladder trucks to try and coax the 25-year-old woman down, but she cursed at them and refused to budge. They finally jumped on top of the big rig and wrestled her into handcuffs. Houston Transtar reports the dancing woman was preceded by a crash involving three vehicles. It is believed the woman was driving one of the wrecked cars. A fireman said she wasn't making any sense. A lot of times she was real quiet, but then she had outbursts about the FBI and the CIA being after her. The woman was taken to an area hospital for a mental health evaluation. My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.
On your PC, tablet, mobile phone and internet radio receiver, this is Lutheran Radio UK.